listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 237 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This week we're going to look at a couple of things, but we're going to start off with interesting notes to do with the future of content blocking on Chromium web browsers, aka what Chrome is made from, what Opera is made from, and oh, what Microsoft Edge is about to be made from. It's funny that. But Google's announcing some development stuff that basically they're moving from. Is it which API? Is it Retroid?
You've got me now.
Okay, so they're basically restricting depreciating the blocking ability of web request API.
Yeah,
and they're switching to sort of having declarative net request APIs.
Yeah.
To sort of block content, but it's not as far-reaching as a web request API is, isn't it, in its present state?
It's kind of a much more polite, and you know, we can't do anything if you still want to charge your shitty advert through. But could you maybe not? Would be awfully nice if you didn't.
Yes. And it's funny that Adblocker Plus is the one that makes the most use of decorative net request API at the moment, which also happens to be the ad blocker that Google and a couple of others like to pay off to allow their ads through and be whitelisted. It's funny that. It's awfully funny. I mean,
yeah,
none of this is set in stone, but it's awfully funny.
I mean, I use Adblock Plus on Chrome, and it's most of the time it's okay, it's fine. I wish I could block all the shite, which was all the pop up stuff, but that doesn't seem to be covered. It's just a little bit. So hang on, this big main one, which is packaged with at least Chrome now, isn't it?
Yeah,
Adblock Plus. And they seem to be favouring that because they know that, yeah, the adverts can still get through.
Yeah. I mean, I've been using uBlock Origin now for probably 2 years, I think. And and also, though, for longer than that, I think it's been the last 3 years I've been using Firefox over Chrome. Like, I'll occasionally use Chrome if I need functionality that Firefox doesn't have, but most of the time I'm in Firefox and I'm blocking tons of stuff. Like, there's only a couple of sites which I'm like, okay, I'll whitelist your ads because you're worth it, but there's too many sites where it's just like you just can't trust the ad network that's being served.
No.
And so you have to block because you're like, well, I could not block and then have my device infected by God knows what. Or I could block and, you know, deal with stuff. But also, like, Google's kind of rationale is like, oh, well, if we stop there being that level of control over content blocking, it means that it will take less time to, like, call up a web page, and that'll be better for the user, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yes, but what if the content that's being checked by the plugins is worth blocking?
Yeah.
Because, for the aforementioned reasons, not because people shouldn't have to put up with ads, but more because the content itself is going to, like, it's completely ignoring the fact that content, like ads, slows down web pages anyway. Like, most ad servers out there are not particularly speedy, or, you know, advertisers might be trying to shift content onto your browser that's actually quite hefty.
Yeah, I noticed that, especially when I'm trying to browse one of the reasons I use Chrome is that if I use different computers, it can just, you know, it can read the history and, you know, sometimes the tabs from, you know, other ones that I'm using. And, you know, it keeps the same password list, everything like that. So, you know, it's all nice and centralized for me, you know, kind of suits how I use it. But, yeah, the number of times I've tried browsing a site on my tablet and it just like grinds to a halt and I just have to, you know, leave it there for a minute until it, you know, it catches up with whatever heavy shite the site has decided.
Well, it's decided to throw out.
And it'll usually be a, do you want to do, no, I don't. And it's just close.
I mean, Firefox has got things now, like you can have a Firefox account that's based off whatever email address you want to use so that it syncs history, tabs. I'm not sure about passwords because I don't, because I use a password manager anyway. But yeah, it syncs content across devices. So I use it on my personal phone and on my personal laptop. But yes, I prefer Firefox these days after getting fed up with Chrome eating all my resources on various computers that I had and then increasingly phones. So yeah, I've been using Firefox now. But also, like, I'm maybe a tiny bit paranoid these days, and there's a couple of bits and pieces that I like to go into where there are dragons and tweak as necessary just to delight advertisers just that a bit more, and various data collecting entities that wish to gobble all my data, because, you know, that's fun. But yeah, I think going back to that issue of what's content blocking, because it's not just ad blocking, like it's like, you know, stuff like you put Origin in that and you made it, like they help you stop bits of stuff being executed, like JavaScript and that. Bits of actually can be either quite, you know, bandwidth hungry code or dodgy code.
Yeah, and there are various sites that run Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And crap like that. And it's just, yeah, you can get some really amazing things in JavaScript, but that can also be bad and you don't necessarily want it running.
But yeah, so there are reasons to block other than not wanting terrible life-destroying ads. I say life-destroying, I don't know, it's just, you know, that stereotypical, you looked up a thing somewhere because you were thinking maybe about buying a thing, or in my case, sometimes researching a thing, and then the ad for it just tracks you about everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's just like, no. So, yeah. I mean, Paul, do you worry about blocking ads at all?
What, c'est moi?
Yes and no. I mean, ads can generally be annoying, but the thing that worries me is when, you know, kind of you get pop-ups that are more insidious. So, yeah. I mean, I know ads.
Oh, we really want you to install this Flash plugin, which is an EXE, and it's completely safe.
No, yes.
But, no, I mean, my phone kind of comes up with every time I go onto a different site that I've never been on before. Yeah. It'll be like, oh, such and such wants to, you know, ping you some, you know.
Oh god, the push notifications thing with some sites at the moment.
Oh
yeah,
oh yeah. And please, it's just like, please, no. Any website which has that come up, no, I don't care what the hell it's for. I'm never going to let a site push notifications at me.
No.
Yeah. Like, I mean, in a way, it makes me wish that sites realise that they could either get on board with either sort of like something that's an alternative to RSS, or just going back to RSS and be like, if you want people to actively subscribe to your stuff, encourage them to read it over RSS. But mind you, there's not many readers around anymore. Feedly still works.
RSS was great. I liked RSS.
I mean, technically speaking, pretty much all podcasts run still off of RSS because nobody's kind of come up with a system to kind of do away with it yet. So, yeah. That's like that, basically. Actually, I'm just checking out Feedly for the first time in a while. I haven't actually looked at it in a ways. So I used to have a lot of business stuff on it, but I don't look at it all now. Mm. So it's not relevant to my job. But yeah, I don't like my control of something like this being messed around with. And actually what Google's proposing is taking away a degree of control that maybe most users aren't aware that they could have.
Mm.
But for those of us who know the tricksy ways of the internet, Google and advertisers, actually we like having that level of control. I mean, heck, there's I like reading articles on MIT's Sloan Review website, which is their business management. Their MBAs, like almost like publishing front area for like the more magazine style stuff. I like saving PDFs of their articles when if there's a particularly good one.
Yeah.
And they've got these banners that appear that are like obviously trying to encourage you to subscribe or letting you know you're logged in and stuff. And actually, when you try to do a PDF version, I don't think it's intentional. I think it's just, you know, the design. It'll start covering over like words in the PDF version of the article and obscuring them. And they'll do it like once a page, like where technically the header would be if you're reviewing it on a screen. Like the header area with the navigation menu and stuff, and obviously this banner. And it's like, I have to go into uBlock and block those elements temporarily in order to then be able to save a PDF of the article for future reference. It's fun. I mean, admittedly, like you're only allowed so many articles a month, but I'm like, well, if I'm using my little credits to the few credits I've got because I haven't got a fully paid subscription to view stuff, I'd like to be able to save PDFs of stuff so I can remember I wasn't imagining something after I've read it.
A properly made PDF is an invaluable thing.
Yeah. So, but then obviously because it's part navigation, these bars, I then got to go back into uBlock's settings and be like, Anne, can you just delete that, you know, customization now so that I can continue navigating around the website. It's fantastic. But anyway, I think that moving on from this area of technicalness, basically Google have said that, we're in talks with developers. If they don't like it, I mean, we'll listen is kind of like the vibe we're getting. The register with the first after it being called out by uBlock's creator was at Raymond Hill, whatever about it. But register was first doing an in-depth article on it, and they're just like, nobody believes Google about any of this.
I mean, let's see, how does Google make its money? Oh, yeah, adverts. So I understand this, I understand them. Because that's fine. That's how they make the money, and I don't. Well, this is a lie, but I don't necessarily hate all adverts. Just most of them.
Yeah.
But I can kind of live with adverts so long as they're not intrusive. Anything that pops up in the middle of a bloody article can get to hell.
Well,
and he's getting blocked.
Also playing videos.
Yes, but then we can probably blame the other data mining monolith for that, can't we?
We're talking Facebook.
With Facebook. Everyone prefers video content, so all these sites, fire a lot of their journalistic staff and then, pitch to video, and which no one wants.
But also, you're forgetting the fact that Facebook cooked the numbers a bit on video.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They, well, so, no, I'll I'll just say Facebook lied.
Mm.
Now, it is either they were incompetent and miscounted when it's their entire bloody purpose for existing to be able to, you know, do these metrics,
mm.
or they lied so they could just push, you know, companies to do something that they, you know, thought would work out better for them.
Yeah.
Not the companies, for them.
Yeah, I can see that. In personal tech news, I finally switched mobile phone security software for the first time in several years. I have been using ESET Mobile for quite some time. Subscribed.
Is that an oldie one?
No. I mean, ESET, obviously, they've got regular desktop software for both business and personal use. You know, it's one of the less system-hoggy kind of security softwares out there that, you know, you can do for, like, firewall, antivirus, blah, blah. But due to changes Google had made in Android in one of its latest updates, a bunch of functionality I liked using, which was to do with like call blocking and text blocking, and that, like, it was no longer available. And I was like, well, why am I going to pay for something that doesn't have these features anymore? The answer is I'm not. I'm going to go look for a cheaper option. So when I found a slightly cheaper option, that also had like some extra functionality that I didn't have previously, and was definitely still working with Firefox, because obviously I use Firefox on mobile. So I went and ended up with Bitdefender after a brief, like, in refund window time dance with Kapiski, which decided to tell you after you'd installed that, oh, by the way, we only block content for Chrome. You know, to stop web phishing and stuff like that. And it's just like, oh, well, I use a different browser than Chrome. I mean, obviously, again, on my phone, I've got Chrome there just in case something won't freaking work.
Well, that is just...
You know. But, yeah, so I was just like, okay, well, I'm going to get rid of my subscription that I've just paid for. I'm going to get a refund on that, and I'm going to go somewhere else. So I went and found somewhere else, which was highly reviewed, which was Bitdefender, and so far it's been... Okay, I'm ignoring its attempts to get me to use its VPN, though, because I have a VPN that I'm very happy with, and in order to pay for its VPN, which obviously has nowhere near the customizability of my current one, it's like, no, that's not worth my time. I'm quite happy with what I've got, thanks, bye. Just, you know, stop people from launching dodgy websites and malware on my phone, thanks. That's all I need.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was just a bit annoying, like, trying to find reviews and stuff, because obviously you still got, like, McAfee, Norton still getting reviewed by, like, the main sites when you're looking up for sort of security software for phones, and certainly on Android. Avast, for a moment, that, like, it might do the job, but then it wasn't very clear whether or not it had any counter sort of web phishing stuff. Which was like, I kind of like it when my security stuff stops me from going on dodgy links, or like stops it and then it's like, are you sure, sort of thing. Who else did I look at? Obviously, I didn't. McAfee and Norton were mentioned in reviews and were not considered for a second, because, you know, they're pants on desktop. I didn't see why I would want to subject my phone to that.
And also, McAfee is a hard stand.
Yeah.
Being extraordinarily polite.
Extraordinarily.
Yes.
But yeah. So I've kind of settled on something. Like I said, the call blocking's kind of annoying, because like, I mean, you've got a degree of call blocking now built into at least the later versions of Android anyway. So it's like, yes, we're going to take it away from apps, but we're going to put it into the phone software. Like, it was a permissions thing, so certain bits of you can't get the permissions for it now. And it's just like, oh, okay. I've got a mysterious number from Luton that's been trying to call me, which a bit of Googling has made it look suspiciously like it's some kind of sort of dodgy, probably some automated call thing asking if I've blah, 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 I need a blah, 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 do you want some blah kind of deal.
Yeah, that kind of crap is why I don't tend to give out my mobile number or anything like that, because I've had very few calls on my phone, which aren't from friends and family. But when it comes to the home phone number, so yeah, I got a call a few days ago, which was this is BT.
Of course, it's BT.
I'm not with BT.
Mm. I mean. Ours is when it's like it's BT internet. It's like, well, I've never had my internet with BT, you know.
Yeah.
What up? Nothing's up. Go away. Of course, I mean, we're still never going to beat me reenacting some kind of demonic summoning in the middle of my living room from a dodgy call center in the middle of, I don't know, like India or something the other year.
Because
that was... they kept calling back. I couldn't tell if it's because they were worried or if they were pissed off. But every time they called and I answered, and I was like, oh my God, what the hell is this? Kind of thing, making gurgling noises and stuff that sounded like hell had come to earth. It was very entertaining. I had a very sore throat afterwards.
So, oh, well done.
But I'm trying to think, have you had any tech involvement lately that hasn't been something serious, but it's something fun? Good news. There's some good news.
Well, I've not looked into this much today, but I discovered that as part of, because around about Christmas and the Halloween and such, one of the Steam sales, I noticed they were flogging off Steam boxes incredibly cheap. Steam links. I think the one I got was about 12 quid, including postage. Because I got another one for the for the shed.
Okay.
So I can use the same PC throughout in different locations, just as long as I've got a display and a mouse and keyboard. And they're very good, so long as it's all wired. But yeah. I recently saw a video which was about how Steam were dropping, selling the hardware, and they'd released the software for Raspberry Pis. So, you could just install the Steam Link streaming software onto a Raspberry Pi, and then you could control your PC from, another location. Which is great. The video I watched, he seemed to think that it was okay, but laggy. And my question there would be, did you use it on Wi-Fi or did you use it on Ethernet?
Yeah, because Ethernet's always going to be better.
Yeah, it's going to be better, but I tried Wi-Fi on them, and even in the next room to the... with almost a direct line of sight to, the hub that it was connected to, it would frequently just lag out and be awful. So it's like, yeah, I'm not using Wi-Fi on these. But I thought, I've often wondered what exactly are in these Steam Links. Because they're small, compact, they've got a few USB inputs, they've got, HDMI, Ethernet, all that kind of thing. What exactly are they running? How dumb are they? Because before logging in to your PC, they have an interface where you can configure everything and, do you want quality and what screen resolution are you using on, all that kind of thing. So I knew there was so much of a system there. But while just searching for something today, which was, I tried using a USB drive while I was out in the shed, and it didn't pop up as being recognized. And I got pointed to something which was talking about native apps. for Steam Link, and it was. And yeah, I've only had very little time to look at it, but it seems that Valve really, as part of the release of code, so people can compile the code or download binaries and Raspberry Pi. They've released the Steam Link SDK. So there are now several things that you can run natively on your Steam Link without even logging into a PC. And it was, this could be useful. Let's see, I'll give you a quick thing. Let's see, there's the one which brought me, to this forum on the Steam community, which is virtual here for Steam Link USB IP. DOSBox, so you can play old PC games on a Steam Link. Kodi, or Xbox Media Center, so you can watch streaming video and various plugins available from Dave Internet. So I hear. I wouldn't know anything about them because I'm a good boy. Emulation Station, which is a front end for various emulators. It's pretty much, if you use RetroPie on the Raspberry Pi, then that's the front end it uses. RetroArch, which is one of the big multi-emulator collections. It's kind of... I was going to say front-end, but it's clearly not because it has its own cores. But it will, if an emulator is adapted to a RetroArch core, then it effectively becomes part of RetroArch and can be launched and controlled, and you've got a unified front-end. And it can be quite nice. And yeah, there are people grappling around with what can be ported, but I really like the idea of MAME for all, because of course MAME itself got ported. There's a version of Doom, the original Doom.
Because it wouldn't be complete without...
It wouldn't be complete. Well, I mean, if you can make something for a format, it's one of the first things you're going to try, because it's not gargantuan like MAME.
Yeah.
But it's a fairly recognisable end product that you're looking for. So, yeah, can we get Doom? And there's OpenTyrion, which is, is OpenTyrion the strategy game or is it the shoot 'em up?
I wouldn't know.
I forget. But yeah, basically it's becoming a platform on its own because it's the shoot 'em up. It's an old 2D vertical scrolling shoot 'em up which was released on PC, I think in the 90s, early 90s.
Okay.
And they... some people went back and coded an open engine so you can play the files. And of course, it's one of those. It's nowhere near as popular as stuff like Doom, but it's one of the first things that people go for because it's relatively light and it plays quite well. So I'm going to be having a look at that because even though I enjoy using the Steam Links as just a way to remotely use my PC. I also like the idea of just being able to run Doom on them. Because why wouldn't I? Yeah, go on. I love Doom.
I mean, there are worse games to have.
Exactly.
It could be E.T. So.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, that was shit in 1983. So I don't even... there's no nostalgia there. There's just shared horror.
Fair. I'm going to move us on to what we've been up to that has nothing to do with anything Steam Linky or upgrading, downgrading, moving IT security on a mobile phone or browser blockers, because that's obviously riveting, stuff.
Oh, it is.
Especially when you think it's riveting when you start thinking Google's being an arse,
which they are in a way. But yeah. I'm not one of these Google haters. I tend to have a fairly neutral view on Google. I think they give me more positive than negative, where I can't say the same for Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, that's something we should mention. The fact that it looks like by the end of 2019, Facebook, Messenger, WhatsApp, and Instagram's all the messaging that they own is going to be in the same freaking things. And people who've been avoiding signing up to Facebook, we've got a friend who's been doing that, it's still going to end up as part of their actual ecosystem.
Yeah, I don't use it much. And most of the time when I use it, it tends to be someone I, you know, used to like, just disappointing me.
Okay.
But, yeah, I've used Messenger to keep in touch with an old girlfriend, but I don't want him to use my mobile number because I know for a fact he would hassle me to hell and back. But it's annoyed me. This is like a side thing, but it is directly related, so it's not a tangent, technically. But if you use the mobile, because I've been avoiding installing the Facebook app on my phone and my tablet because it is a bloated piece of shit.
Oh yeah.
And it tries to get rooted tendrils everywhere on your system, and I don't want that. It's bloated, it slows everything down, it gets in the way, it interrupts, it takes over services, which I don't want it going anywhere near, and it's just Facebook, so yeah, it's probably doing something evil. But yeah, so I've avoided doing that, but if you use the mobile version of their site in your phone browser, you cannot use Messenger. In fact, what it will do is if you try to reply to a message or just, you know, have a look at the notification on the mobile version of it, it will come up and take you directly to the App Store or, you know, Google Play, so you can download Facebook Messenger.
That's funny, that.
And it's, fuck off. That's not happening. So I can get around it sometimes by forcing it. So it seems if you can view the desktop version of the site, you can get away with reading, but you can't write anything out because it's just screwed how it inputs the text. So I reckon that's probably on purpose. And if it's not, then the fact that they haven't fixed it is on purpose. Because it's just, no, go on, use our app. It's like, no, there's no chance in hell I would use your app, Facebook. Seriously, there is not. Even if it wasn't for lack of space on my phone because of the, you know, the way it just, you know, yeah, the way it just uses hundreds of megs, if not gigs. Not hundreds of gigs, but you know what I mean. A multitude of gigs.
Many gigs.
Of, you know, of storage and cache and probably data because it's doing stuff in the background that you don't want.
Yeah.
I mean, plus there's all, you know, the tales you hear. You're never sure exactly how accurate they could be, whether people are posted about it or, but they, you know, they're talking about going, you know, buying a new table or a TV set or something. Just, you know, physically talking with someone near their phone and then an advert for a new high definition 4K.
Yeah. The annoying thing with both mine and Paul's phones is that Facebook Messenger was installed as one of the default apps, and you can't, unless obviously you root the phone, you can't get rid of it. All you can do is obviously A, not be logged in, and B, disable the app. But I mean,
I was going to say,
which is freaking hilarious, because Europe, but the EU, is going after Google at the moment for it having its search function and shit, like, installed as default on Android phones, and having Chrome installed on there, you know, and that they've been paying off, you know, phone manufacturers, or giving phone manufacturers favours, so long as they include Google, and it's like, okay, well, if Google's been doing that, hello, you're going to go after Facebook for this bullshit?
Yeah, please do.
You know.
I mean, but yeah, a previous phone I had Facebook and Messenger installed as, you know, as part of the base application stuff, and that is why I rooted that phone. Because even if I tried rolling it back, it would bypass the system's, you know, app update thing, and it would, you know, try downloading updates for those on its own. So not only using up space on, you know, on my phone for the base install, but also updates which I didn't want.
Lovely.
Yeah, so that could go do one.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to move us on now. I think it's time to talk about what everyone's been up to. And because he's been quiet, I'm going to go with Paul. Paul.
Me? What have I been up to? Apart from working, I have been watching obviously a load of YouTube videos as, you know, as standard. But okay. Finished watching The Good Place, Season 3.
Yay! And also, no!
exactly. It was a quite an emotional ending, and I kind of agree to a certain extent with one of Emily's comments about it, in that it's a little bit repetitive, but it's a weird way of repetitive. It feels more like it's mutations rather than just straightforward, you know, repeating.
Yeah. It's not quite Mystery Spot, but it gets there sometimes.
You haven't even seen the last couple of episodes either.
No, don't you dare spoil it.
Oh, so you're actually going to watch it at some point?
I might.
You might.
I might deign to.
All right.
Have you watched the previous two seasons, Emily?
Yes.
Yeah, over Christmas time we, went over a friend's place, and I kind of said about it, and so we watched most of the first three seasons, so all of season one, all of season two, and most of season three.
That was only because sorry,
no, go on.
I was gonna say only because I didn't push hard enough for a Yuri on Ice rewatch.
Yeah.
We only watched it back in August.
Oh, Frankish. Wow. That's years.
I'm getting such an evil look right now.
I have to say, I think it suffered from us not waiting the third season because, we just binged the first two seasons. And it worked really well as a binge, but the third season just seems to have... It's not engaged me as much, and I'm pretty sure that is because we haven't been able to binge. So I should have waited.
Fair enough. Have you actually seen the entirety of it now?
Yes.
So eventually when you do rewatch it, do you think it's going to be definitely better off binging it?
I think the third season is going to be, yeah.
I think you're probably going to be right, to be honest.
Have you been up to anything else?
Let's see. What did we watch for date night?
We didn't. We were out, remember?
Oh, yeah.
And then we just watched some House.
Yeah,
did we mention last week that we started rewatching House?
We mentioned.
Yeah, okay, we're still on season one of the House MD rewatch, but obviously we're getting this to the end though.
And it's still not Lupus.
It actually takes a few episodes for lupus to be mentioned as a potential illness for any of the patients that come in. It does actually take a while, but obviously, as we all know, that then gets repeated enough that it's obviously become a meme. For the actual fandom, or trope for the fandom,
yeah.
Rather.
But I, to a certain extent, I kind of feel like House is one of those characters that I think they may have been a little bit lazy with the whole, you know, he's brilliant, but he's mean. He definitely comes across as like a almost a Sherlock type character who's, well, as in like the Benedict Cumberbatch version of Sherlock, who's kind of up himself. And it's like, yeah, he does have the smarts to back it up, but by the same token, he doesn't have to be a dick.
But it's fun.
And to a certain extent, I think, you know, kind of same thing with Rick Sanchez from Rick and Morty. And I think, in a way, we've got a lot of representation of male characters that are really, really hyper-intelligent, you know, more intelligent than the people around him, and they're a dick. And I think there's a lot of people that kind of think that those two go together when they don't have to.
Yeah. And I will say, in Rick and Morty's favour, it's you know, to anyone who actually absorbs the series, it's never presented as Rick being anything other than, yeah, he is probably the smartest guy in the universe, but he's also the biggest asshole.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You should not be taking moral lessons from him.
Yeah. Yeah, he is not someone that you should want to be.
Do not ask him about trams. Don't ask.
You're referencing The Good Place.
Yes, don't ask Rick about trams. You won't like what his decision about trams may be, and whether or not they crash into a crowd or crash into a single individual.
But one of the good things about The Good Place is that it does reference proper philosophical
thought.
Debate, and, you know.
Yeah, it does.
Concepts.
House occasionally does as well, but mostly from a more nihilistic standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, so is it?
Well. Yeah, because the Resi 2's your thing.
Except for with a humiliating point I'll mention in a bit, but let's have Retroid go next.
Okay.
So, well, I will skip over one thing I've been doing, which is that Atari, that 8-bit Atari I've been working on, as in Atari computer. I don't seem to be any closer to working out what the hell is wrong with it, so I'm probably just going to put it away on a shelf until I can be asked. Because that's just, you know, one of my, I was reading up some tech documents and it mentioned that there was a chip which replaced a group of chips in the earlier ones, in the Atari XE computers, which performed memory management duties and also passed on the system crystal for the CPU timing. And I thought, well, that sounds fairly important. So I used the last of my solder braid, and I used some solder rosin so I could make it as clean a removal as possible. Mm-hmm. Removed the chips, added sockets, swapped them over between the two machines. Not a single difference. It didn't care. So I'm looking at this and thinking, well, unless it's a trace or something I'm missing somewhere, and there's a lot of traces to check on a 1980s 8-bit computer. So yeah, I don't know.
Can you explain traces for our listeners who aren't used to?
Traces are the lines you see on circuit boards, and they are pretty much just metal links. They are
what I'd like to call the pretty parts. They're actually quite pretty.
Yeah, they can be very pretty, and they are pretty much the mass market, mass produced, tidy way of doing wires.
Mm.
That's basically all they are. They're just metal traces between one point to another, and they can pass between different layers on the circuit board, so they can go around the, you know, there can be a hole in the board, and so a trace that's linked to a, you know, a pin on a chip on the top can go through and then come out the back and go to something else. So, you know, it's an efficient way of wiring everything. You can imagine that checking to make sure that all of those are fine and they're not broken is quite a task.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's just gone on the shelf. It was just... okay, get 65 XE out and loaded up Attack of the Mutant Camels from Jeff Minter and played that for a few minutes instead. So it's like, yeah, that I will go back to it in the future, but yeah. Let's see. We watched Punisher season 2, which I quite enjoyed. I liked what it was doing with the new character introduced.
In terms of Netflix MCU, we're still stuck on Punisher season 1. That's how far behind in all of that we are.
I'm not entirely sure. Yeah. With everything that's been going on, I'm not entirely sure whether we're going to end up keeping up with everything.
But also the fact that whole Lady Vigo got fucking cancelled. Yeah. Like, it's like, oh yeah, we could get... Oh, we caught up and oh. Oh. Oh.
Yeah, that is a bit of an issue.
Because TV series that don't actually get its proper wrap-up, it's just really frustrating when it just kind of stops and it's like, but you didn't wrap up anything.
Yeah.
But have you been finding Punisher season 2?
I will not say anything about the plot line, but I have not been enjoying it as much as the first season.
Okay.
The first season to both of us was quite a pleasant surprise after not, you know, really getting on with the character in Daredevil. And it was, well, it's something to watch, we suppose, but, you know, they've already introduced the character in, you know, Daredevil, so why would they need to reintroduce the character again? And then it just surprised us how well it worked.
Hmm.
Yeah,
I think in a way they've kind of echoed Spider-Man introduction to the Marvel Cinematic Universe in a way by having the character kind of, you know, already being established in another story, as it were.
Yeah,
and just being like, okay, now the character is, you know, going to have his own adventures, and it's just kind of the very comic book way of doing it, I suppose, in a way.
Yeah, and I can see some of the comic influences from Punisher coming through watching it, and you know, to me, some of them work, and some of them are a little bit, I'm not sure. Just, you know, just from the perspective of a Marvel comic book writer trying to do what is effectively, I would call a Vertigo comic, if you know what I mean.
Mm. I know what you mean.
So, you know, at times it's a little bit, really? But, yeah, it's still better than Defenders. which was just, oh, God, that was, yeah.
That was embarrassing.
That whole thing of, oh, dear, that's why you're introducing Iron Fist? It wasn't fucking worth it.
Pretty much.
Let's see what else we've been watching. We've been watching Star Trek Discovery, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, and that has been good.
It was a very interesting episode for last week.
Yes, the second one on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Having Pike as captain does kind of make me think that it is trying to hark back to older Trek I suppose less war-torn Trek in a way. You know.
Yeah, I like the explanation that across the Enterprise has been away.
On a 5-year mission.
Yeah, which of course it has, but doesn't make sense. And, you know, that was, you know, one of the reasons of, you know, the Enterprise. But anyway, yeah. I've been enjoying it quite a lot, and it was a very Star Trek episode.
Mm.
No spoilers, but I did. You know, that character who they talked to, and he said, oh, you know, that knowing this, it's enough. I was just shouting bullshit.
Because
it's just, oh, yeah, I'm just going to be here now. And even though I know these things, you know, are definitely, you know, this way instead of that way now, yeah, it's enough for me to know that. and say, bollocks, bollocks it is. We jump into, you know, someone's transporting up, jump on them. Take me with you. It's
surprise.
Yeah, it's just no, that, you know, that wasn't, you know, that didn't chime. But I, you know, I kind of like how it, how they slightly bent it at the end. So that, you know, that was nice. But yeah, it felt like a very Star Trek episode. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm liking how the second season is going. I didn't have the problems that a lot of people had with the first season.
Mm.
Because I think a lot of people who had problems with the first season didn't make it through to the revelationary parts of that season, which kind of explained a lot of their misgivings.
I mean, I've really hated some of the criticism based around like Star Trek Discovery basically not being proper Star Trek because, oh, it just didn't feel like it. It's like, that doesn't make sense because all of the other, you know, Star Treks have had their own unique flavor. You know?
Yeah.
It's a different situation to the Enterprise, as you know, to DS9, to Voyager. They're all very, very different series, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, and as a counter to you know, saying I've, you know, been watching Star Trek Discovery, we've also been watching The Orville.
Hey,
same.
So yeah, well, watching that and thinking, wow, this is has a much lower budget than Star Trek Discovery.
It's not just that, but I think it obviously is designed to make it feel like the Next Generation. So
it has
the kind of similar type of like camera work and whatnot, and you know, setup, and it's good, it's enjoyable, but by the same token, it feels like it's not just copying Star Trek, it's copying specifically the Next Generation in a kind of feel.
Did you note it with the latest episode, the astrology one, or the First Contact, you know, episode, which, you know, I thought that was a very Next Gen episode.
Is that which one's that?
Was in Discovery or Orville?
Orville. The very latest one.
Wait. Are you watching US Dave Internet?
Yeah.
We're not that far.
Okay, well, no spoilers for it, but one of the things I was going to say is not a spoiler, but it is relevant, but you just won't have seen it. They've got Brannon Braga working on this now, because I noticed that flight past, and Brannon Braga, do you know who I mean?
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah, one of the head guys of Star Trek, who is kind of like on level of Rick Berman, who's kind of...
Brannon Braga. I'm going mad. I think it was Ronald D. Moore.
Ah, right, okay.
Who, again?
Ronald writer. D. Moore. Started off on Next Generation. And you see, I'm just checking on IMDb to make sure that I haven't fucked up with. But yeah, he started off on writing episodes for Next Generation, and then moved over to I think DS9 and possibly some Voyager. But yeah, he started off on Next Gen, and you know, has worked on a lot of Trek. Okay. He then went on to reboot Battlestar Galactica.
Okay.
And you know, yeah. So he's been working on a few things Star Trek related.
I mean, I was going to say that I'm pretty sure that the people behind both Star Trek Discovery and The Orville must be pretty pissed that people keep on trying to separate them out and saying that one's better than the other.
Mm.
Like you have, you know, like proper Illuminati working on both. You know, I mean, I'm pretty sure, because obviously Jonathan Frakes has been involved in, like, certain episodes of Discovery as well, like, you know, being director and stuff.
Yes.
Has he done anything for The Orville? I can't remember exactly.
He's directed the, I think, the first episode of the second season.
Okay.
And
what, of The Orville or Discovery?
Orville.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, you've basically got, you know, the people behind the original Star Trek, you know, producing two different TV series, and it's like, why have you got to pick between them?
It's because people are wankers. It's the long and short of it. It's just, you know, yeah, I don't quite understand why, you know, oh, no, I was right. It was Brannon Braga.
It was, okay.
Fucking hell. Yeah, basically another Star Trek Next Generation alumni.
Hmm.
So he works on things like Best of Both Worlds.
Ooh.
So, you know, he's worked on Trek for a while. Yeah, executive producer Brannon Braga.
Hmm.
So, yeah, that explains it. I noticed that, let's see, who was the director for the episode? But I'm pretty sure that the guy who played Tom Paris was, he directed an episode.
Oh, I mean, it's a Robert something, rather.
Yes.
Because they have about like three Roberts on Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw that. Oh, bollocks. I don't know. I'm not sure if. No. But yeah. Basically, watching Orville, and yeah, it's a lower budget version of you know, Star Trek, but they can still do some things which, you know, Next Generation would have been going, ooh, it's nice that we can do that.
Hmm.
Just because they're doing it now. And it, to me, it's. This season is feeling more Trek than the first season was.
Oh, we're still on the Orville?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And, I've been, you know, I think Star Trek Discovery has got, you know, more of an idea what it's, you know, how it's going to be now that they've introduced it. Because I think one of the, someone who was working on the first season, although there have been several departures, so who knows whether they're actually, you know, still working on it. They were discussing how the first season is to introduce, and then the second season you get to know.
That's fair.
Yeah. So I only two episodes into, you know, Discovery season two, and I'm glad it's back. Rewatched the first season in time for, you know, the second season to come along. Have you watched the Star Trek shorts?
I have.
I haven't yet.
Yeah, they're a variable point, really, but I really liked Saru's one. So that was a nice twitch. Orville is kind of going less... I think... Who knows? It may be that Seth MacFarlane has got more secure about it. You know, he knows that he doesn't have to keep Seth MacFarlane-ing. If you know what I mean.
I don't know. I mean, I suppose we should mention spoilers, but the previous previous episode to the one that we've watched, so probably two episodes back from you.
This is what's been shown on FX.
Yeah, with Bortus. And the pornography addiction. I mean, that seemed a bit Seth MacFarlane.
That was a bit, but it was also kind of, you know, I could see callbacks to, you know, Next Generation episodes.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, the episode where we meet Barclay.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. But by the same token, it obviously went very porn blocker. Well, sorry, porn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But I quite like that episode, and just the idea of, you know, going onto the holodeck and to be greeted with oiled up aliens.
Okay.
Yeah, Oh, and the dungeon as well.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we better move on to Emily.
Oh, you can ask me what I've been up to. You can ask me.
Nope, well, I'm afraid we don't have time for that.
No, yeah.
Is it supernatural?
No. Well, yes, but not everything. Supernatural had a very nice episode. What was it? That was 14-11? Yeah. Season 14, episode 11. Yeah. Which is too full of spoilers for me to describe, but it was a really good episode. There's some good character stuff going on. There are a certain character that you kind of wish would just freaking disappear, and hopefully after the events of that episode, he won't be around for a while. We can but hope. Paul was a very generous individual and sent me the most romantic message over Twitter DM on Friday to show that he picked up Resident Evil 2 on PS4 for me to have a go at. It's very romantic. I have played it on, well, I played the GameCube version that came out.
Which had a rookie mode, which is what I think you played it on.
Yeah, and I'm playing it on, like, because easy saying.
To be fair, I mean, the control scheme of the original Resident Evil 2 was such that half the difficulty did actually come from the controls.
Yeah.
Oh, they were hideous.
Yeah. But anyway, playing Resi 2, which has been completely remade, you know, you've got new voice actors, you've got changes to bits of the story, or at least some of the locations and stuff that you go to, and that, not necessarily the puzzles, though I haven't got far enough in yet to kind of do a full comparison. But I'm still in the police station. I've only found one key. It all went to hell a little bit on Saturday night, and I kind of noped, and Paul had to take the controller from me and save Leon, because he'd become overwhelmed by way too many zombies.
In too tight a space.
In too tight a space, and it freaked me out. It is 18 rated, and for good reason, in the UK. It's a really fucking scary game.
It's gorier than the original.
I mean, put this way. I've been quite happy playing stuff like Dead Space and Dead Space 2 in the past. I mean, Dead Space is really freaking scary.
It's very atmospheric.
Yeah, but at the same time, you still feel like you've got a degree of power, even though they've made it action controls for this remake. It doesn't actually feel like it. You actually feel like you've got very limited power as a character. Like, there isn't much you can do.
So far,
save yourself.
I mean, to me, so far, it feels a lot more linear, which is possibly where half the power thingy comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the feeling of lack of power, even though you've got, like, more awareness, or maybe because you've got more awareness.
And the thing is that I know certain things anyway about Resident Evil 2. Like, I'm having to kill a lot of zombies, and I know this isn't going to end well for me. Because I know what happens with those toddies. It's just...
I think, because obviously you kind of shoot a zombie a couple of times, it drops down.
And it's not necessarily dead.
And it takes a while to just kill a single zombie, just, like, keep on popping it in their head. No,
and it's like,
get back up and pop it.
No,
back down.
And knives are a limited resource as well. It's just,
Leon doesn't have his suplexes.
No, he has none of the skill that he has in Resident Evil 4.
Which is understandable, because at this point he's still a rookie.
He's still a rookie. He's still a baby. But
baby Leon.
Yeah, Yeah, it's quite terrifying just because of how underpowered you are in comparison to previous games. Not that I've played the Resident Evil game that came out a couple of years ago that was it first person?
Hey?
Is it first person?
Oh yeah, the VR one.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's not VR, but you can play it on VR.
It's not VR exclusive.
Yeah. So, I mean, technically there have been various other ones, like the spin-offs, like Resident Evil... Survivor, I believe. That's not to be confused with Resident Evil Outbreak, which there have been a lot of spin-off titles for Resident Evil.
But anyway, Resident Evil 2 is absolutely bloody terrifying, and also very bloody, and absolutely bloody terrifying. Can you see where I'm going with this?
It's bloody and terrifying.
Yes.
And also bloody terrifying. It's all in where you put the comma.
Mm, So yes, I've been playing a little bit of that. I'm slowly getting the sort of spoons together to be able to go back into that, because
and only with me there.
Yeah, I'm refusing to play it without company, mainly Paul, because at least Paul will accept me whimpering and like crying into his shoulder or something uncontrollably.
And there's me going, oh, that bit's different. Oh, that bit's different. Oh, yeah. He doesn't pop up there.
Yeah, it's great. I've also I listened to this really good podcast episode on Radiolab, which a friend of mine had linked me to. It's called Punchline, the episode is. It's from the 16th of January. It is hockey related. How do I explain this? The NHL, so the National Hockey League of the States, has an annual event that happens around about this time of year every year, where you get a bunch of, in theory, really good hockey players together, and they do a whole bunch of skill tests and stuff to see who's the best with the hockey skills, and then they all play a game. It happens over the course of several days. In the 2016 All-Stars event, there was this player called John Scott, who was nominated by fans to compete in the NHL All-Stars. And the thing about John Scott is he was technically a goon. He was a fighter. You didn't go to him for skills and stuff. Anyway, the episode's a really interesting listen about it, kind of looks at like the dubiousness of the NHL, how actually, campaigns by fan groups / media organizations to switch, like, I think this is worse than the outcome of Boaty McBoatface, what happened, okay? Like, when fan voting goes awry, this episode, like, really hammers home how that kind of thing can go terribly, but also that actually the NHL actually can be asses, and that's not the players themselves, that's obviously the entire organization that runs the league. So that's really worth a listen, like, not for necessarily the hockey stuff, but just for just like, this is a fucked up real life story. Oh my gosh. Like, there's some good stuff, like, there's some happier moments in it, but you realise quickly on this is not going to end well. And then the other thing I've been up to, I did read a little bit more of Becoming by Michelle Obama, but I've taken a break from that because the remake of Pet Sematary approaches, and I'm determined to finish reading the novel before I see it. So I have been reading the novel. I am now, I think, I'm just over 75% through the story, according to my Kindle. And it's gotten to, like, some of the worst stuff that happens in the story has happened, but we're at that point in a Stephen King story where the oh shit-o-meter is about to kind of go, oh shit! and everything's gonna really, really never ever be the same again, because it's a horror Stephen King novel, so it's like, oh no,
with the oh shit-o-meter.
Yeah,
because obviously a story would use that at the end when everything's kind of relatively okay.
I don't think everything, this does not seem like a story that's going to have a really satisfyingly happy ending in any way. Like, some people might be alive.
Would I be right in thinking, sorry there, if I was interrupting, because it kind of cut out again, but would I be right in thinking that the oh shit-o-meter is silent up until it reaches such a level of oh shit-o-meter that it has to just proclaim oh shit itself?
Yes, this is pretty much it. It is at that moment where if he wanted a less poopified visual, it is you have somehow managed to get that tower of Jenga as tall as yourself. God knows how. You know, you've got maybe, you know, you've got the slightly bigger blocks, but it's as tall as you now. And you're just about to add that one, that, and you're not sure if that one last block's gonna, you know, you're pretty sure that if you make this next move, you're doomed. And you're gonna do it because it's your next move.
And that's when the oh shitometer.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if, like, every day had that? And you'd be like, you know,
that towering tower of Jenga.
When it gets to that point, all you hear is just a voice going, oh shit! And then.
And then some Jenga falls over.
Or something equivalent to that.
So that's the point in the story I've got to. My Kindle also reassures me that I have less than 2 hours left of reading, but actually it is kind of a lie because I'll read it when I'm trying to fall asleep at night, and I'll get a couple of pages in and I'll be like, but I haven't stopped reading, you know, because I'm turned off my Kindle yet, and it's like, I've read the same thing a couple of times. Okay, it's time to turn it off, and so it may think I have longer to go than if I was awake.
You see, for me, when reading, it's that happens just like when my mind just suddenly goes, I wonder about this. My eyes keep on going, and I go, I haven't read that entire paragraph. Hold on a moment, and go back to it. And that happens all the damn time.
Oh dear.
All the time.
Oh dear. Anyway, I'm looking forward to the movie remake. It'd be interesting to compare it to the original novel from the 70s when it does come out.
Have you seen the original film adaptation?
No, I did keep wondering about, because Paul's dad had, like, when he still had VHS, it had like a couple of Stephen King films on tape. So I think he had Carrie and, what's the vampire one?
Just vampires.
Salem's Lot.
Oh, right, okay.
He had like a, I think it.
Oh no, it was John Carpenter.
Yeah. I'm thinking. Yeah. Anyway, he had like some tapes of that, and I think Pet Sematary was also one of the tapes he had, but I never watched it. I have watched Salem's Lot, and I have watched Carrie. I've also read Salem's Lot and read Carrie. So, I've watched Misery, but never read it. Oh, and. It's been a while since I mentioned it, but I am probably one of the few people that has read Insomnia, which is not a horror novel. It's just one of his weird ass kind of what if kind of novels. That's also incredibly long. Like, it's rare to see it in the flesh because it's so big. It's like The Passage, which is a slight horror sci-fi novel. By, I can't remember the name, but they've been making it into a TV series, or it has been made into a TV series, but that's a chunky mofo, and I made the mistake of buying that on Kindle. I didn't realise how long it was, and I didn't have, like, time left in book mentioned, and I was wondering, why is this book taking so long? And then I finally, because it was in my early days on my Kindle, and then I sort of got the first Kindle, and I like finally adjusted the reading time left in book display thing. I was like, oh my god, it's how long? But I finished it.
3 weeks of constant reading.
Well, and a lot of train rides, because it was when I was still getting a train to get to work. So, but yeah. That's what I've been up to. So I think that's all we've got time for this episode. So it is good night from.
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter's at Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find Nerds Assemble on Twitter at Nerds Podcast, and you can find us on Instagram at Nerds Podcast. You also find us on Facebook as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Notes for this episode will be over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Stitcher, maybe a couple of places I can't remember off the top of my head. But good night.
Good night. Yeah, thank you. That was perfect timing there, Carls.